I wrote down some facts because this is happening at the national level, but we need to connect it to what's happening in our community. So between February and July of 2025, with the new administration, Black women lost 319,000 jobs in America. Their unemployment rate went from 5% to above 7%. At that same time, white men gained 365,000 jobs. The administration stripped people out of leadership positions. By saying it was a backlash to DEI, leaders like a woman who was on the board of the Soybean Commission, the first 4-star female general in the armed forces, that stuff trickles down. We don't have trickle-down economics, but we have trickle-down hate.
We are the guardians of girlhood, paired with multi-generational perspectives. And when we say that every girl has a story, what do we mean? Well, we're here for the girl searching for her people, the girl craving an outlet, the girl with an incarcerated parent or a broken home, the girl who hides in the bathroom at lunch, the girl who doesn't believe in herself, the girl with big dreams but no idea where to start. By opening up and sharing experiences, we not only empower ourselves, we inspire others. We express, we create, and we elevate. This is Love Girls, the podcast.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to another episode of Love Girls, the podcast. This time, we're in conversation with Annika O'Melia, the founder of Rock Island Line, an independent platform covering local politics, culture, and community life in the Quad Cities. In an era where trust in media feels fractured and local journalism is disappearing, Annika has built a platform rooted in curiosity, accountability, and the deep belief that communities deserve honest conversations. So together we're talking about truth-telling in small towns, what it means to challenge power when everybody knows everybody, and how motherhood has shaped the ways she sees her work and her city. We're also touching on why she still believes Rock Island is worth fighting for.
Would love to start the episode with a little bit of an icebreaker. We call this one This or That, so it's rapid fire questions, and technically you're only supposed to get like a second to think about it.
Okay. So I'm very impulsive, so this should work.
Okay, good. Oh, that's actually so funny because I think one of the questions is overthinker or impulsive. So okay, are we ready? Mm-hmm. Okay. Early mornings or late nights?
Late nights.
Print newspapers or podcasts?
Podcasts.
Farmers market or bookstore?
Bookstore.
Privacy or transparency?
Transparency.
Sweet or salty?
Sweet.
Overthinker or impulsive?
Impulsive and then later overthink it.
That's real. Comfort movie or comfort album?
Comfort movie.
Mm-hmm. Clean house or creative chaos?
Creative chaos.
Plans or spontaneity?
Spontaneity.
Texting or calling?
Calling.
Calling. Oh, I'm such a texter. I'm like, don't call me, text me. Okay. Kylie, I'm going to give you the same one. Early mornings or late nights?
Late nights.
Print newspapers or podcasts?
Podcasts. So fun.
Farmers market or bookstore?
Bookstore? Yeah.
Privacy or transparency?
Privacy.
Sweet or salty?
Salty.
Overthinker or impulsive?
Impulsive.
Comfort movie or comfort album?
Comfort album.
Ooh, clean house or creative chaos?
Clean house.
Plans or spontaneity?
Plans.
Texting or calling?
Texting, definitely.
That's so funny. I have a follow-up question for both of you. So, what is your comfort movie, Annika, if you don't mind sharing?
Okay, well, the movie I've probably watched the most in my life is called Magnolia, but it's not like that comforting, but it's a movie that I will like repeatedly watch, and it's kind of a dark, long movie, so I don't know. But I also love Baby Mama, I love that movie, Bridget Jones's Diary. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? So lots of different movies, but the movie I've watched the most is Magnolia, When the Frogs Fall from the Sky, and William H. Macy has braces.
And then Kyla, what's your comfort album?
I'd probably have to say the Sweetener album by Ariana Grande. She's just been around for a long time, and growing up, I didn't have much of my own music taste, so I kind of just heard whatever, but she's just been around for forever, and she kind of stood out to me. And every time I listen to her, I think about the days that me and my little sister would, like, make up little fun dances to some of her songs. So it's just nice to go back and be able to listen and get those fun memories.
Well, we have so much to get through. Really quickly, I would love to do some introductions with identity. It's funny because we read a intro and we give like your bio in the beginning, but sometimes people want to show up as whoever they feel like that day. And so I would love for you to introduce yourself and identify yourself with however you're feeling today. And as an example, I will go first. My name is Jasmine Babers-Gunn. I am your hostess with the mostest. And I'm a dog mom and a plant mom and a gardener who has recently planted tomatoes, kale, celery, basil, oregano, and a zucchini plant. And I would love for you to go next, Annika.
Yeah, so my name's Annika, and my identity. I really feel like a Rock Islander. You know, I feel very rooted in place. I'm a mom. I have four kids. I'm a partner, so I've been with the person that I met in high school for, I don't know, since I was 15, off and on. I'm a friend. I would say I'm a thinker. I think a lot. I spend a lot of time in my own head, like just thinking about the world and thinking about people and stories. And I guess I can add, I'm a therapist by training, and I guess I can add that I'm a podcaster now. So, yeah, but I don't know which one of those feels the most descriptive, but I'm all those things.
You're all of those things. I love it. Do you identify as a journalist?
That's a good question. I have a hard time saying that because I just feel like I lack the training and the expertise. And so I do think I'm someone who writes about my community, but I'm a little messy. You know, I might get into it with someone in the comment section, which I don't think journalists do. So I don't feel like I have the training maybe to claim that, but I would say maybe I'm a witness and someone who's giving voice to the things that are happening that feel important to me. But I don't know if I can say I'm a journalist or not. I'm just going to do what I do, and people can call me what they want, you know.
I love it. Kyla, how are you showing up and identifying today?
My name is Kyla Nephew, and I'm definitely very creative. I love all forms of creativity, whether it's art or writing or music or experiencing things firsthand. I'm definitely a really big traveler. I love learning about new things, whether it's a language or history or just the customs of a place that I'm visiting. Like, I feel like life is really about having those experiences, whether it's good or bad, but obviously, I enjoy the fun ones. It gives me something to look forward to. I really love having things to look forward to and like having dreams and goals for the future.
I love it. And I know you're going on some adventures this summer. Where are you going?
I will be going to Barcelona, Spain for 2 weeks. And then I'm going to Paris, France for 2 weeks afterwards.
The coolest. You are the coolest teenager that I know. Okay, so tons to talk about. I would love to start with like your origin story, you know, or the origin story of the Rock Island line. And I feel like you might not feel like this, but I feel like journalism and starting something new and starting a blog, being a source of information, can be really daunting. And I think it's a really brave thing to do. I'm wondering if you had like an aha moment when it came to starting like the Rock Island Line. Was there a moment where you realized that somebody needs to tell the truth around here, you know? And like, what was that like for you? Like, where was the inspiration or the moment that you decided this was something that we needed?
Yeah, so I grew up in Rock Island, so it's very much rooted in my love for this place. But I come out of it after having been a therapist and a business owner and kind of in these other spaces for 20 years. And as a therapist, you're working one-on-one with people about their lives and how to get where they want to go. And a lot of that is truth-telling. It is telling the truth to yourself about the good stuff, about the stuff that you struggle with, about the things that have happened and how you come to terms with them. But I also noticed a pattern of, I mostly worked with women, a lot of abuse and mistreatment, and whether that was at a job or in their family or, and how quiet people can feel about the things that they've been through, that shape them and they overcome them and they move on. And, but oftentimes those people who caused harm weren't held accountable or called out, or people don't feel safe. They're worried about losing their jobs, their security, you know. So a lot of my work over 20 years was hearing about things that happened to people that they had to kind of overcome and seeing all this resilience. And but none of that ever really spoken publicly, or, you know, so I don't know if a part of me felt like we need to speak truth to power, because it's like, let's say that one day I come and drop off a bag of dog poop on your doorstep, and then you open the door and that gets on you. You pick it up and all of a sudden it's on you, and it's you smell it and you feel it, and it starts to, maybe it's like stuck on you. You know, your process becomes wrestling with that, rewriting the narrative about who you are, you know, pumping yourself up, connecting with your friends. Like, you have to overcome that. But I somehow got involved or wanting to, like, can we return that bag of dog poop to the person who put it there? Like, can we have that side of the conversation? And so, you know, as a therapist, you can't expect people to do that. But as a person in my community with a lot of connections and privilege and a voice, also, I'm a person who's gotten myself to a place where I don't have an employer. I don't have anyone who can kind of tell me what to do or threaten me with anything, really. And so I feel like I'm at a place where I can speak freely without the same fears that I saw so many of my clients hold when it came to, like, calling out a bad behavior from a boss or a system or a partner. So I guess that was part of it, was just watching that. And then in the world, seeing all this stuff going on and feeling very powerless at a national level and knowing that I love my community, and like, what would that look like to be involved at a community level? And kind of thought a little bit about politics, but I am a very transparent person. I'm not always warm and fuzzy, or I've been nice my whole life, like Midwest nice, but I would rather fight with you and know who you are and what you really believe, and we can mix it up and have conflict with each other. And that's not really what politics is about. Politics is about getting your picture taken and, you know, knowing the right people and working connections and compromising. And so I was like, I think I'd be miserable. And I did brush my hair for you today, but I don't like all that stuff. So this felt like something that blended my interests, and I could feel passionate about it and motivated and alive and have purpose, mixed with like creativity, writing, you know, documenting things, witnessing, and kind of looking at big patterns, thinking about things therapeutically, thinking about relationships, and just being positioned in this unique place to not really be afraid to have difficult conversations with anybody. Not that they want to talk to me, but, you know, so I guess all of those things together, it was like, I felt called into like a bigger, I'd say therapy is kind of this micro thing, one-on-one. I was feeling called back into like community work or macro, how everything fits together. And I don't want to be a politician. So how else does someone have some sort of say in this world? How are we going to be in this world together? How are we going to reshape things for my kids? You know, what is it going to look like 50 years from now?
I love it. You touched on so many things. One, I would love to be more like you when it comes to conflict. And I feel like I've always tried to be really agreeable, which is funny because I went to college and majored in political science and gender and women's studies, and found that politics is also maybe not for me. I love grassroots campaigns, and I love community-oriented movements. And I think that was what like originally drew me to politics. And then I worked on a couple of campaigns, and I saw all of the sides, and I was like, this is a rough life. But I appreciate you calling out and identifying that there are so many stories and so many experiences in this world. And a lot of times people who are experiencing a particular issue aren't necessarily the people who are talking about the problem and the people who get a voice about it. And I really liked your poop analogy, like who dropped this, like who put this shit on my porch, you know, like, yeah, I love that. Kyla, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree that that's a really good take. Because, yeah, like you just said, it's people talking about it who aren't actually having this experience or having say in situations that they're not in or dealing with. And I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's right. I think people that are actually experiencing these situations firsthand, they should be the ones who have a say because it's their life.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I grew up in Rock Island, and I've heard you guys on the podcast talk about Above the Hill and Below the Hill. And so I grew up above the hill, but my first job was lifeguarding at Longview, and it used to be a 50-meter pool. And you, from the lifeguard chair, you were sitting like midway between above the hill and below the hill. And so you could kind of feel the kids funneling into the pool. And I think in high school, just this deep sense that the world does not open up to everyone in the same way. Opportunity does not present itself. People are treated differently. And a lot of my experience of knowing that is that I've run in a lot of the circles where opportunity is abundant and where you can get things done by being polite and nice and working your connections and sending an email and picking up the phone and making a phone call and massaging connection and like privilege, basically. And you can be really sweet and agreeable. And what I've noticed in my life is the more you connect with and want to understand and advocate for people who are not connected, politeness stops working. You can send the same email. You can send the same voicemail. Everyone I've had conflict with from my writing perspective, I've reached out to by email or phone to say, do you want to talk about this? Here's where I'm going to come at you from, you know. This is what I'm thinking. People will just stop picking up the phone. They won't respond to you. And so it's that vantage point of being connected and deeply loving people in different worlds that gives you this like deep appreciation of someone who feels blocked off from that ability to massage connections is not making that up in their head. It's very real. And I've walked in both of those worlds. And the more you advocate for people who are less connected to resources, like financial resources, power, influence, the more you notice that the status quo starts to shut you out and starts to not respond to the nice, polite way of doing things. And so you have to engage in other strategies to have your voice heard. And then you kind of start to wear the labels, like the poop on the doorstep, like, you know, you start to be labeled as a problem for that behavior.
It's a great segue into my next question that kind of revolves around like power and like politics. And I'm wondering, because I see you on Facebook, I see you in comments, and you are so honest and you're not afraid to give your opinions. And I wonder, what does it actually feel like to go toe-to-toe with politicians, with power structures or institutions in a smaller community where everybody knows everybody? What's that like? And where do you get the confidence and the bravery from?
It's not comfortable, and I would say that I don't like it, and I would prefer if those people would just come on the podcast or we could have a conversation about it. But I do think it's necessary because a lot of our local politicians will post about the Trump administration or what's going on nationally. There's a lot of focus on national politics from our local politicians, and we need to be more focused on what is happening in Rock Island. How are we as a community responding to the concerns of people who live in Century Woods or issues with our high school students or, the homelessness, like in our own community? And you see this stuff happen all the time. So, redlining, I know you've talked about that on your podcast. I have this concept of something called black boxing. And if you imagined yourself being inside of a structure where you can't see what's on the other side of it, a lot of the ways that people in America achieve upward mobility and get ahead in life and create wealth and income and all that stuff is by access to power, opportunity, and knowledge. And in our community, it's this process of what I would refer to as black boxing, where if you're on the outside of that knowledge and opportunity and power, it's hard to get ahead. That's happening nationally, but it is happening in Rock Island with these very tangible, you can point to them, you can name them examples. And it's awkward and it's uncomfortable. And what happens is if I point something out, there's a lot of personalization, like, oh, you're being mean to me. But it's like, we're all so used to doing this that I'm not necessarily finding fault with the individual, but I do find a lot of fault with the process. You know, I consider myself to be like more... And I think how you withstand that is you know your values and you know why you're doing what you're doing. And so overall, I feel like my focus is on creating a better container so that if you were dropped into Rock Island or Illinois or the United States and you didn't know how you were going to show up, were you going to be a woman or a man? Were you going to be white or black? Were you going to have a disability or, have be in Mensa, whatever that smart people program is, how would you want the system to be set up so that you could have a reasonable quality of life and have rules that would seem fair and almost that you'd be blind to how you'd show up? And I think I'm just focused on like, how do we create a more equitable and just container for how things happen and how they occur? And I guess when I see that not happening, I'm pointing it out. It is awkward and I don't really like it and I don't like the way that it feels. So I would say the other piece is remembering like on whose behalf are you doing that? So, I kind of went toe to toe with a local politician who reported some inaccurate things about an unhoused woman's death. I kept her in my mind. She matters more to me in this conversation than something. And I think that's the freedom of being a woman who doesn't have someone who pays my bills or can fire me or get me in trouble and shame me or put, take something away from me is I can hold her in my mind and say, well, she in this equation like matters more because it's right and wrong. And I don't care. Like if we're comfortable hurting her feelings and she's passed away and can't stand up for herself, I'm not really worried about anyone else's feelings because the bar has been set that we can talk about her. So we can talk about anyone. I don't know if that makes sense, but
it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. And you're touching on so many different things there. Like, one again, like I love what you say about you, like keeping top of mind, like why you're fighting, why you're arguing. I think that that's so important. We have a lot of young women who, listen to the podcast and a lot of our fellows often talk about like, sometimes it's hard to like speak up for yourself. Sometimes it's hard to, myself included, sometimes it's hard to not be so agreeable, so palatable, I suppose. I think that like you talk about like having somebody who's there to like, sign your checks. And I think that for me, I also think about if I show up angry, if I show up in a bad mood, as a Black woman, like there's implications with that as well. I'm angry or I have an attitude. And so I appreciate that perspective so much. And I also admire you so much. And I'm thankful like you're doing necessary, important work when you And I know you're making yourself uncomfortable, and I appreciate that for all the people who can't advocate for themselves. So thank you.
Yeah, and it is only because of, you know, my family history, the legacy of what I would call privilege. And I know there's this backlash against wokeness and, you know, we're not supposed to use that word anymore and we're not supposed to, it's whatever, but it's true. I mean, and living generationally in Rock Island, you see that play out. The only reason that I can do what I do is because of all the privilege that I have. So all the wonderful people that I know who don't have privilege, if they tried to do what I'm doing, there wouldn't be a platform. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, because it's almost like embarrassing in a way to be like, well, here I am and I'm going to show up and say these things and someone will maybe listen to me. And that in and of itself kind of feels wrong when you think about why, you know, why are people listening? And it's, yeah, there's so much like attached to, I've heard you talk about Rock Island High School, and I went to Rocky, and all the stuff going on right now with the high school and the issues people have highlighted, a lot of that, in my perception, this is just me, and this has made me have to disagree with friends of mine, with people that I respect and I care for. But there is so much going on toward Black women in positions of leadership at Rock Island High School right now that is almost breathtaking to me. So, you know, there's fights, or, you know, there's stuff going on. But as I started listening to the community, people were sending me messages on Facebook. I noticed this pattern that people were very willing to say bad things about Black female leaders. You know, our new superintendent, oh, well, she's running a scam where she goes around the country and steals money from school districts, and she's sleeping with this person and sleeping with that person. And oh, the HR person was at a fight and kicked somebody in the head. And this, you know, these are professional women who have doctorate degrees that other professional women and men in our community are so willing to spread misinformation and straight up lies about. And it's that discomfort from the community of like, look at these leaders, who are they? Will we let them be there and stay there? And, you know, it's just moving that goalpost always, like, who can be in charge? Who can lead me? Do I feel comfortable with that? And if maybe I don't, what starts to swirl in the community? How does that disintegrate trust? I mean, I just have such a difficult time with all that, because I'm like, well, when I was in high school, we had lots of deans and principals, and I don't remember them having to reach a caliber of like, would you be my best friend? Do I love the way your face looks every time I interact with me? Are you always saying the right thing? It's like so many people who had the right to be mediocre and to be leaders as mediocre human beings. And now we have, I really respect our superintendent. I think she's exceptional. But the bar is different. I mean, she has to make you feel good while she leads you. She has to be pleasing to you while she leads you. She has to be connected. There's just such a higher bar for performance. And it's really frustrating to me. And people with doctorate degrees, the dean that was hired, people questioning her, you know, knowledge, her intention. I don't know her. She's probably an imperfect person, but imperfect, you get to be imperfect. That's always been the standard. It should still be the standard, you know? So I'm kind of rambling, but that stuff is alive and well. Do you know that I wrote down some facts, because this is happening at the national level, but we need to connect it to what's happening in our community. So between February and July of 2025, with the new administration, Black women lost 319,000 jobs in America. Their unemployment rate went from 5% to above 7%. At that same time, white men gained 365,000 jobs. The administration stripped people out of leadership positions in by saying it was like a backlash to DEI. Leaders like a woman who was on the board of the soybean, you know, commission, the first 4-star female general in the armed forces, that stuff trickles down. We don't have trickle down economics, but we have trickle down hate and dehumanization and ways of thinking about our world. And so I feel like elements of that are starting to happen locally. Like our new mayor just put up four people for a commission, four new commissioners. That's his one of his only powers. And our city council was like, oh no, we're not happy with this process. The mayors have always been able to choose who they want and promote them to those boards and commissions. And because he didn't call every single person who applied, which has never been the case, I've applied for boards and commissions in the past. It was like, no, we can't just put these people on the boards and commissions. And if people are listening from out of town, our mayor is a Black man, and 75% of those applicants were people of color. Marcus McQueen and Alicia Haynes and like awesome Rock Islanders. And it's like, ooh, we're not so sure. We have a problem with the process and we need to go back to the drawing board, when that's never been the case. So sorry, I'm talking too much.
No, literally so much good information. So thank you for bringing the statistics. They made my stomach turn. Mm-hmm. It's scary times. I feel like even like when you're talking about bringing it, what's happening at the national level, bringing it down to our local community. I did hear about the commission, and Alicia is an amazing human who is actually on our board. So we can attest to how qualified and how passionate and how talented she is. And I didn't know the ins and outs of the situation, but I did feel some type of way about it because I, like you said, it feels like the bar is constantly moving. The goalpost is constantly moving.
Yes.
Kyla, I want to give you a chance to respond and also ask your questions.
I really think that's also kind of crazy when you're speaking about like the mayor and him choosing and people having doubts. Funny enough, he actually just came to my church, I think 3 weeks ago, with his mom, and it was a great like way to see how he connects with his community. And I have no doubts that he has the ability to lead or choose the right people or candidates that he sees fit. So it's really, yeah, disappointing to see that other people don't have trust in his decisions, and that they're even questioning things that normally would never be questioned. And honestly, just speaking on that topic about emotions and trust, do you think people underestimate how emotional local journalism can be?
Well, I certainly get fired up. I mean, because you're talking about things that affect the tangible outcomes of people's lives, their income, their children's opportunities, their wealth. And it is emotional and it is real. You know, there's a local Black businesswoman who doesn't really want to be known yet about this issue, but I've been working on a story. She's put her blood, sweat, and tears into an endeavor. She has received help from the city of Rock Island. But if you put it apples to apples next to a more connected white businessman, you can like look at these things, and I will write about this eventually, but you can literally look at the difference. Like sometimes we're taught that this thing and the backlash against DEI is because we need everything to be fair. And in my mind, it's because the status quo does not want competition. You know, it's wild to think about my lifetime. Okay. My mom was 20 in 1969. The Civil Rights Act had just passed 4 years before that. She could not get a credit card without her father or her husband approving it. And she didn't have access to the full reproductive health care, like abortion was illegal. When I was 8 in 1988, that's the first time women were allowed to take out small business loans on their own. So in my lifetime, I have 4 businesses. That's how I've gotten all my freedom and ability to run my mouth without repercussions, is because I have financial independence from a partner or from my parents. And that didn't happen in this country until 1988. And now I'm looking at my daughter, they're rolling that stuff back. There's over $700 billion worth of contracts that go out from the federal government. And under the Biden administration, they were supposed to make sure that a percentage, just 10%, went to businesses that were run by women or minorities. They've taken that away now. So even the tiny bit that was tried to be like carved out to help people get on level playing field is being stripped away. And I look at my daughter, if she lived in Iowa, she'd have less reproductive freedom than me. They're pulling women off boards. They're pulling women off, you know, firing women. And I worry about her future if we do not push back. And this narrative that it's because, oh, DEI is not fair. It's like, no, you don't want to compete. The fastest growing group of entrepreneurs is Black women going to school, getting their degrees. And to your point, Jasmine, they're moving the goalpost. So when I look at my daughter's high school class, I'm like, these girls are crushing it. And, you know, I think school is hard, is not set up right for lots of people, including boys. So I don't want to discount the struggles that boys have with academics and school. But it's almost like, okay, 1965, like 1880, women could have companies, and we're kind of progressing too fast. And I think the status quo is scared. And it's like we need to reinstitute things that hold people down, because if we actually have to compete on a level playing field, the people who hold the power are not going to like it. And if you think about America, like, we got to be this great nation on the backs of other people, whether that's slaves or sharecroppers or your wives or, you know, people that needed to like help amass these huge amounts of wealth. And the leaders of our economy are just trying to recreate that through different means. So AI, I mean, what is that? It's how can I capitalize on the work of something else to line my pockets and amass this power? But we feed AI. It's our brains. It's our art, our creativity, our thoughts. You know, the things we've written and said are being kind of scraped so that, I don't know, I can really go off on a tangent, guys, but, you know, these are real things. And I just, the pushback against wokeness and DEI really upsets me. And I'm like, call me all the names you want. I will keep pushing for inclusion and equity and fairness, because it is about access and opportunity to be in that room where you hear the thing, or to have that connection to rub elbows with some. Everything is about connection. It's about proximity to power. That's what all that is. And giving opportunities for people to be in proximity to power. And if that doesn't happen, the other alternative is just like, there's a film festival going on at the theater across the river called Polling Focus. You know, the second tier of this is like, fine, we will move our resources and collectively work together to create alternate power structures. Like, we can't ride your bus, we'll make our own bus system. We don't fit into your media, we'll make our own media. You know, it's harder because there's a lack of historical capital and access to capital. But if people were organized, it could happen, where it's like, we'll just pull over here and stop. And but that might mean we have to throw away our iPhones. I don't know.
I mean, like, yeah. And I, what you're saying is resonating so much, because like with the rollback of DEI and feeling like we're losing so much momentum, so much ground, even like at Her Voice Media, we have been applying for grants. I mean, month after month, week after week, applying. And the way that the landscape is set up right now, the work that we do and the stories that we tell, and the young people that we try and uplift, it really feels like it's not a priority. We've had to change so much of our language in our grant writing because of the rollbacks, and because we've had funders and we've had people who we've worked with for years tell us that we can no longer like explicitly say that we serve predominantly, you know, girls of color, girls from underrepresented communities, because of some of the DEI rollbacks that we've been experiencing. And it's felt yucky and like hard and discouraging, because it's our truth and it's why we do the work that we do. But we also recognize that we need money. And so it's like a constant battle. It's like the iPhone thing. Like, are we going to throw away our iPhones for the greater good? And it's always feeling like a internal battle with wanting to do good work and keep up to do the good work, but also not wanting to completely give into the injustices that are happening to us, and like feeling like we have to take it on the chin or like turn the other cheek all the time, you know?
Well, it's so frustrating because it's like if there was a sandbox where all the power was, and you're like, can I play in your sandbox? Because that's where all the power is. Yeah. And it's like so hard. How do you build a new sandbox, or how do you pull, you know, because I don't know. And I don't know the answer. I don't know how to do it. But I think the more people who tell their stories, stand up to the stuff that isn't fair, you know, be willing to call out unfairness, to question the narrative, and just to have a different narrative, just to have an opposing narrative of like, because it doesn't feel good to be like, you know, can I come over there to get some of what you have? Because we wear that as though that means that we're not enough because we don't have the capital. It's just a problem of capital. And we know the history of our country. We know why capital is unequal. Money, you know, it's
money always. Yeah,
but it's not who you are. It's not your goodness. It's not your worth. It's not, you know, and I think that's why focusing on Brack Island felt more manageable, because it's like, could we figure out how to fix some of these systems here in this small place? Mm-hmm. Could we play around with that? Could we, yeah. I mean, my dream would be that we actually kind of eliminate, this is going to be very radical, but kind of eliminate nonprofits and eliminate unions and eliminate all these ways of like, and we recognize that every American has value and they just get like an American dividend. You know, if we live in the best country in the world and all this stock market and everything's generated from all this creativity and opportunity and all the subsidies that big companies get to do their wonderful creative scientific work, just give money to people and let them do with it what they have reason to value, so that they're not forced to walk around like entrepreneurial, you know, beggars and be like, can I have a quarter please to do my thing? It's like, just give people money and see all the cool shit that people would come up with if they didn't have to do 7 flip-flops and 2 backbends before they were deemed worthy. It's like, you're limiting creativity through the eyeballs and the spirit of the giver. And I would rather live in a society where people had what they needed to be cared for, and then we could all be more creative. We could all be more spontaneous and problem solvers and leaders. The welfare system in this country serves to just squash people, to say, you know, oh, it's devastating. It's devastating to families. It's devastating to women. It's devastating to spirits. And it kills so much energy and ability and like cool shit that could be happening. Just give people money and get rid of all the layers of like, I don't know, bureaucracy, I guess.
No, literally, like we joke about it all the time. But we're like, people think that like, we want to do this work. And it's like, not necessarily that like we want to, like there's a necessity to it, but we're always like, if one day we wake up and we're just like not needed anymore, like, can you imagine like a world where like our program is not needed? Like, that we want to be out of a job, you know, like we don't want to feel like we have to do this work. And I'm not only like into what you're saying, like I fundamentally agree. Like, imagine if we just really shook things up and we just gave everybody a fair.
Yeah.
I know it is radical.
You get healthcare, you get your universal healthcare, you got your universal education through maybe some colleges, but through high school. Yeah. And then you get some sort of a, you know, payment for all the brain scraping that the LLMs that are going to make all, you know, go ahead, scrape my brain, take my data, but give me a dividend for it. Yeah. I mean, and let people, because then what could people do? You could move in with your low income friends and you could pool your resources. You could put your money together and you could start a company. But now if you move your friend in, you're homeless because you've now lost any sort of rental assistance for the job that is not paying you enough to pay $1,200 in rent as a single person. Like, all the incentives are jacked up and they just serve to like hold people down. I mean, ugh.
I know. Yeah. Okay. And a fun but interesting question is, if Rock Island itself were a person sitting at a table, what do you think it would say it's hungry for right now?
A new economy.
Say more.
I feel like we have this historical thing where we just want to like double down on like old white man jobs.
Yeah.
And that is what the robots are coming for. And where a lot of our actual skill and the reality of who we are in, it's like allowing ourselves to grow. We should be education, service, nursing, healthcare, soft skill, creativity, art. And not that you can't have a mix, but I feel like our city chases industry all the time. Construction, like that is jobs. That's the economy. It's a part of the economy. But the way that we are gearing ourselves up to respond to that, when we're not actually hiring Rock Islanders en masse for those jobs, is going to be devastating in my mind. So I think like a creative and new economy of, you know, just being known for education, like the soft skills, like social science, nursing is the future. How do we care for people? What types of roles and jobs can the robots not take? And those are female. Those are female industries. My fear is that as that happens, they're going to push the goalpost again and be like, how do we get all the men in here to take all these jobs? But, which would be fun. Which would be okay.
Have you heard of spam?
I've heard of like the ham.
It's... So like, I don't know if it was like 1 or 2 weeks ago, a girl on TikTok kind of like came up with spam because they were saying that exactly what you were saying, like all the guys are going to come for the spam jobs. And people are like, what's spam? What's spam? And it's social media. Wait, hold on. SPPR, A, advertising, and M is marketing. So like a lot of like the creative, like, more media arts focused, like writing, imagination jobs, like feel like very female oriented, or there's statistically a lot more women in those positions. So they say like women in spam or like pink collar jobs, are going to get overtaken by men in the next decade or so.
Nurses and CNAs and then they'll probably like pay better and have benefits, and you know, but it is that pushing of the goal line. It's the, you know, constant rewriting the rules of the game. You know, and the other big thing that I'm just interested in Rock Island, and it is just access to attorneys and legal support, because now it's like the rules are being written through the law and through people who have a lot of resources to manipulate and write the law and write the rules. And then people who lack resources can't defend themselves. They can be silenced easily. They can't stand up for themselves. And yeah, I'm all over the place. I told you I would talk too much.
We love it. Kyla, do you want to jump in with any thoughts or questions before we go into our final round?
Honestly, do you have any people in the community or leaders or activists who you aspire or think we should be locked in with or like knowledgeable about?
Well, Thurgood and I, Brooks and I are friends, and I think he is really brilliant in how he thinks about things and sees things. And so we have a lot of conversations that make me think more critically about the future and how, like, policy and strategy. And so I think Thurgood Brooks is a really powerful community leader. I've gotten to know Rashida Jameson, and I really, really respect her. Corinthia Dothard is someone that I admire and look up to. I mean, there's so many people. My best friend, Jessica Youngblood Kirkpatrick, is worked in corporate law and legal stuff and does a lot of thinking and writing about really this issue of how the law in and of itself is structured to kind of like make inequity worse, you know, make like wealth accumulation. And I don't know, there are so many people. Anne McGlynn, who does Tapestry Farms, you know, the Laura Mann, who does Nest Cafe, Christy Adamson and Chloe Miller at the Third Place QC are like legitimate badass heroes of mine. The way they just do the work, like they're just in there, just doing it. I think the mayor of Moline is awesome. Sangeetha Rayapati, I think she really has a bold and like clear vision of doing a bunch of great like economic stuff and business stuff, but also keeping connected to human need and humanity. There's so many good ingredients for a new future. It's just what I would like is just to mix it up with people, ideas, and draw the powerful out to have conversation, because they can afford to be silent and just like wait things out and not have to talk and not be confronted and not give anything up. And so we have to draw powerful people out to say, like, we need to renegotiate. Like, this is maybe working for 5% of the population of Rock Island, or for businesses that whose owners live in Bettendorf or other cities. It is not working for a lot of the people who live in the city. And that's going to require like some messiness, just like in individual therapy. It's like, let me sit with my own messiness and the stuff that I do well and the stuff that I really struggle with. And, you know, politeness and Midwest nice and fakeness, like it's not going to get us where we need to go to do better and be better.
I love it.
In my opinion.
You've given us such good names. I've written them all down as potential board members. I want to sort of end with what we do. It's a list of questions, and it's for one sentence answers. So not necessarily this or that, but short and sweet, that I want to end. And then our big picture question, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So what would you say is your toxic trait as a journalist, or because you don't always identify as a journalist, as a witness storyteller, your toxic trait?
I don't know if it's toxic or not. Like I'm a little impulsive, so maybe I need to like think through things for a larger number of weeks before I post them. I kind of put them out there and I'm like, let's all talk about it, instead of necessarily having this like definitive statement about it. And maybe I shouldn't respond to people in the comments. I don't know if it's helpful or hurtful. But at this point, I just am like, so, you know, I can be kind of immature in that way. But yeah.
Like the idea of having half-baked like ideas or like sentiments about something and then wanting other people's opinions about those things. Like, I feel like that is very like, that's open. And like, I really appreciate that. So
yeah.
What's one hill you'd die on about Rock Island?
That a lot of the like goodness and spirit and potential and future of our city lives in the West End.
Yeah, I love it. What local issue could you rant about for 45 minutes straight with no notes?
Access to capital and business opportunities for people.
What's something people assume about you that's completely wrong?
I don't know. Some people call me a dumb bee on the internet, and I'm like, I'm not dumb.
Trolls, losers.
I don't know. I don't know what, you know, that I want to run for office. I think people think I'm doing this because I'm aspiring to some like future position of power or
Yeah.
political gain or something. And it's like, no, I really just don't want people to suffer. And I think more people should thrive.
Can I just say, I understand your sentiments. It's hard to hear though, because like I said, I majored in political science, and it really is people like you who we really do need in positions of power. But it's those, like, it's people like you who are also like, I don't want to, you know? So it's the double-edged sword, because you are exactly what we need. But I also deeply understand, you know, politics as a system also is not a great thing to be in. People that, I mean, like, as you said, like, Mayor Harris and other, I mean, we can go all the way up to, you know, Vice President Kamala Harris. Like, we can look at all different levels of government and see that it's probably not a great place to be and dwell and spend your time. So, understood, but also sad face.
I think if they got the money out of politics and you didn't just have to spend all your time fundraising and making like polite talking points, like if we could get overturn Citizens United, take the money out of elections so that more normal people could run for office, then it might be a more normal, sandbox to play in. But right now it seems like you, I don't know, like at the national level especially, it's like hard, you're it seems like a weird thing to be in. I don't know.
It is. No, because it is. It is a weird thing to be in. They say, like, statistically, it takes like 7 times to ask a woman to run for office before she even really considers it. So consider this my first time asking. Let's see you.
Yeah.
Next time I see you, I'll ask again. Last question, our big picture moment. One, I have to say, I enjoyed this so much.
Me too.
I appreciate you so much. I appreciate your openness and your wittiness, and how clever and funny you are, and how thoughtful you are. So it's been amazing. Oh, I'm wondering, when people look back on your work, when they look back on Rock Island Line, when they look back on who you were as a person, a creative, a storyteller, an activist, like, what do you hope they say Annika stood for?
That there's like a seed of goodness in every person that is not defined by their economic status. By their like position in society, that when I have been in all these different places and worlds and people who have access to a lot and access to a little, that like we are united through like the human condition, and that we should, fight to have a more equal world that reflects back that we are equal with one another. We might have different abilities and it might we all look different, but that we like need to take care of one another and live in a world where we can like share a little bit more and be a little bit more loving and see the, I don't know, just not have babies grow up in places that are polluted because they don't have intergenerational wealth or enough money in their bank account. I don't know, that just, so maybe that I just fought to have people's value be recognized as everyone is precious.
I think that's an extraordinary legacy to have. I love it. Kyla, any last thoughts?
No, I genuinely really enjoyed this podcast today, and I loved all the topics and everything that we talked about. And I will definitely be dwelling on this afterwards and having my own thoughts and just thinking about the things that we talked about. It was really informing and real situations that are going on right now and things that matter.
Yeah, and I think Her Voice Media is amazing. I think it is so needed, and the future of just that alternative narrative, that other people see the world in different ways, and that the things that you're saying and advocating for are just as important as anyone else in the whole, you have a right and a like, we need to hear the voices of, women and And I honestly think like women with power will take care of society a little bit better. When we get access to a lot of power and money and resources, I think something about our nature is we're like, how do we take care of everyone a little bit better? And that's something we need.
I think so too. And I hope. And that gives me a lot of hope. And I look at young people like Kyla and I, you know, the kids are all right and we're gonna be okay. How can people find you, follow you, listen to you?
So it's just like rockislandline.com. And so, and I do have a podcast, but I've been writing so much and gotten myself into some topics lately. So it's kind of on pause maybe until the fall. And we're hoping to, with some friends, do like a little weekly TV show about Rock Island or kind of increase the footprint of it. So yeah, we'll see how it unfolds. But rockislandwine.com is
rockislandwine.com. Thank you so much, Annika, for being with us today. You have heard another episode of Love Girls, the podcast, and we will be back really, really soon with another. Thanks.
Thank you.